You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm the host of this wonderful show, and joining me, once again, we're not doing, I think, five of the last six shows or seven of the last 10 shows or something crazy, is Mr. Tony East from Forbes.com and the West Indianapolis Community News. Tony, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did have a good Thanksgiving. I spent it researching Keelan Martin at my parents' house and gathering up Pacers information. But really, I did have a good Thanksgiving, good long weekend. And now I'm excited to dig into training camp and Kevin Pritchard's comments and all the fun stuff because the Pacers play a basketball game in under 2 weeks, which is insane.
Yeah, so on today's podcast, we are going to break down Pritchard's press conference. Was it Friday
took place? It was Wednesday.
Wednesday, okay. Well, I couldn't remember the day before.
We took some time off in between.
Yes, we did. If you didn't see, Tony made fun of Pritchard's sweater, I think, on Twitter. But
I did not make fun of him. I just
no, all in good humor. Pritchard enjoyed it. It wasn't like a mean spirit. It was just a.
It was more of a mock than a turtleneck, and I said, "We will hear from a turtleneck wearing Kevin Pritchard suit." And he replied to me and told me, "No, this is a mock, and my wife dresses me, and it is a." He pulled it off. So
he did pull it off. So we'll break down. He had a long press with lots of good nuggets in it. So we'll break down a bunch of those. Tony did break down one of those on Friday about the Hayward trade, just about what is exactly offered. So listen to that podcast from last Friday. And then we are going to do some discussion about continuity off of Pritchard's comments and discuss the preseason schedule because the Pacers have a game, and I have it up on one of my
12 days
on December 12th, so 12 days from Monday. So that's pretty soon. But first, the thing we're going to start with is the Pacers sort of filling out their roster. So the Pacers signed Brian Bowen, who was on a two-way last year, to another two-way contract this year. And they signed their second-round pick, Cassius Stanley. Did I say that right?
Cassius
Stanley. See, I knew I was going to mess it up. I always do. I'll get it right eventually. To a two-way as well. So that maxes out both their two-way contracts. And now, so that means they've got 13 spots. They brought in Naz Mitchell, who was on the team last year. Amita Brima, who I believe was last year in their training camp and never signed, and Rashawn Hammonds on an Exhibit 10 contracts to see if they'll make the roster. 13 guys, or the 13 guys we talked about already, from Jakar, Goga, Lamb, the five bench guys, and the five. I don't want to go through all the names. So
The 13 top guys from last year are back, and then they swapped out Alize Johnston and TJ Leaf as the last two guys with Jalen Lecque and Keelan Martin. And then depending on those two guys, how they do in training camp or what their guarantees are, how Kevin Pritchard said it in his press conference, which I thought was very interesting, is they're going to try to, you know, maybe leave a spot open at the end of the roster or something like that so that there could be competition for that spot, which is interesting because, you know, they didn't say in the presser that Keelan Martin has an Exhibit 10 deal where they did mention it specifically for the other guys, right? But it sounds like he has more guaranteed money than them. And Lecque's money is fully guaranteed this year. And I've talked about waiving and stretching him. The deadline for that is December 9th, which is before the Pacers' first preseason game. So either that battle is going to be because Lecque is waived and stretched, or it's going to be because Martin has guaranteed. Because if neither of those things happen, then there really isn't a battle for the last roster spot at all.
Yeah, the Pacers will they'll either have 15 guys or 14 guys and one who's on the kind of a non-guaranteed way so they can have flexibility in case they want to create a roster spot, in case they want to go on the buyout market, you know, past buyout guys. We just got Trevor Booker is the last one I can think of, right? It was the last major one. Lance almost came here in kind of a buyout market or over from China, but obviously the season didn't resume, so that's why he didn't come over. Well, then he wasn't allowed to. So that's what they could do with that last roster spot at some point. To me, mainly what we're looking at with the two-way guys, interesting because I don't think we know the G League season yet. They haven't really made a decision on that. And what you could see is actually those two guys with the team most of the year and sort of playing a role of like, do we have a COVID outbreak? And so these guys are playing minutes. Like, I don't know if the two-way is not quite the same as an old two-way because they will not be spending as much time, I think, in the G League as they did in previous years.
Yeah, the NBA got rid of the 45-day limit already.
Now it's just games played instead of days.
Correct. Beyond the 45-day limit, there's a maximum amount of time G League guy or two-way guys are allowed to spend with the NBA team. I forget that exact verbiage. But even this year, they're just counting actual games into that calculation, and it's like some high odd percentage. So if those guys are inactive, it doesn't count. They're basically what you just described. They, you know, the pro to past seasons is they can be traveling and going to practices and such more often, which is good for their development because who knows, again, like you said, what's going to go on with the G League. Plus, if there is a G League season and these two-way guys, they're not going to be in a COVID environment wanting to send guys up and down and traveling all the time, right? So it's more likely that a two-way this year still gets you, A, more cash and, B, a better opportunity with the pro team anyway. So just to get Cassius and Bowen on those is nice, good way to get him developed. I did laugh at Pritchard in his presser last week. And listen, the Pacers would, if they drafted me and you in the second round, they would say that they valued us as first round picks, which is pretty funny. But they said they value Cassius Stanley as a first rounder, then signed him to a two-way contract. That was pretty funny to me, because if you value him as a first round guy, maybe give him a longer contract. It's more guaranteed money. But yeah, it's good for them that the G League season, it's not good for anybody. There's a pandemic, but it means
they have more time on the main roster, which right. In the long run for rookies, are most rookies don't play any games. If they do, they play a minimal amount, especially late first round, second round picks. So what it all means is they can spend more time around the professional players, learn from them, travel with them, you know, practice with them. And it's all good in a long-term development than just kind of spending some time with the lesser leagues. Now, there's some benefits to the G League, but I do think for a guy like maybe like Bowen, who's kind of already been in the G League last year, and Stanley, who maybe in an enormous circumstance, they wouldn't maybe give him a two-way deal, maybe just make him a roster player. They can do this and sell him on it in a way that's kind of like, well, giving you a two-way deal, but really you're with the roster all year. So it's like being at the team. It's some flexibility to maybe if we want to play you some more games down there.
And this is probably too much focus on two-ways for one segment, but like even last year, Nazmi Trelong wins them a game, you know, because he played good against Brooklyn, and Brian Bowen plays good against Chicago and wins them a game. They both only played like two important situations the whole season, but these spots matter, like for one or two games a season. So it's important to see, you know, and I guess both of these guys are wings, so maybe it's a little different now, but it's just important to see how they could shake out, how they can get on the floor and stuff like that. But there's not too much to dig into here. I think Mitri Long coming back on an Exhibit 10 is good for him, a good guy to have with the Mad Ants, and he'll be competing for that last roster spot, right? I think Keelan Martin's probably better than him right now, but I do think, you know, maybe Naz is better than Jalen Lecque. So maybe if Lecque is waived and stretched, Naz could compete for that last roster spot. Who knows? I mean, it's if there really is competition, it's going to be interesting. And they wouldn't bring him back if they didn't like him.
Well, and we see what's going on with the NFL, happening with baseball. A lot of guys miss with COVID, and depending on how much the NBA wants to just play through it, we could see these guys more than we expect in a way. And that's even true. Some of the guys they bring in the training camp who could be on sort of a G League-ish roster that maybe doesn't exist, something like that, you could see these guys more often just because you could have a game where four or five guys are out. I mean, what did we see today? I didn't watch. The Broncos didn't have a quarterback today, right? Did they play today?
I only know fantasy stuff.
Okay, well, the entire Broncos quarterback
room. I played the Saints defense, and the Saints defense got a lot of points.
All right. Well, the entire Denver Broncos quarterback, one quarterback got COVID, and they all were around him without wearing a mask. They all were disqualified from playing today.
So, I did hear that story.
Which is like crazy, but like that could happen. I mean, we don't know. I mean, hopefully the NBA's got a better system in place, and the players take it more seriously and whatever, but things happen. I mean, it's just, you know, they just happen, especially when you work with somebody and you spend a long time with them. You maybe let your guard down at some point. But so we could see
these guys. I don't want to go too long on this, but my theory is that the NFL only having one game a week makes it a lot harder to corral guys in the in-between time, whereas the NBA having games every other day or every day means there's not as much travel back home, seeing your family, doing stuff at night, right? It's just there's less of that, even though it's an indoor sport. So we'll see. But I just think the nature of the NFL having one game a week makes it a little harder for the – I can't really articulate what I'm trying to say, but there's just less, like, knowledge of what your players are doing, and it makes it easier to spread from Monday to Friday, basically.
Yeah, I get what you mean. So let's move to Pritchard's press conference.
We kind of blended it in there. I'm proud of us.
Yeah, so I think that the top comment outside of the Hayward stuff, just because it's interesting, was stuff about Vic, right? I just think that was – and basically what Pritchard said was Vic has basically told him and his agent told him that he's committed fully to this to the Pacers in this season and making it work and not necessarily being kind of a Paul George-esque looming over the season the way PG did it last year with the Pacers where, you know, I can make a case he didn't really try the first 40 games and tried the last 30 to make the playoffs and then – you know, left in the middle of the summer or whatever. So there is some of that. So I guess when you hear the Vic stuff, do you take it with a grain of salt? Do you take it seriously? How do you view it?
This matches what Vic said to The Athletic, which was funny because, of course, it didn't come through the team. But maybe at the same time he did relay – you know, the story did say that he relayed this information to the team. It was just funny the way it came out to us. So perhaps that is in line, that jives with what KP says, where he said, I think he said Vic was slamming the table saying he wants to be here or something like that. And KP has been consistent in that message this whole time, despite Vic flip-flopping and source reporting coming out from a million different outlets about him potentially not wanting to be here. KP the whole time has always said that Vic always tells him he wants to be here. And, you know, the agent came out and denying any trade stuff, which is what I heard as well, that he never actually has requested a trade or wanted out, like, publicly or anything like that. So, again, all this jives to me. But, yeah, that was the big comment, right? And he did say he's talked to Vic, and Vic was slamming the desk, and he said that Oladipo's agent called him, like, the day before the presser, said that Vic was excited for training camp and ready to show what he can do this season, right? So I think maybe that's the big thing. If he's had got a good attitude and this stuff with Turner on Twitter is just some nonsense, or with Turner on Twitter, did I say that backwards? Whatever.
It's just a sister in Turner, really, right?
Right. If all that's just nonsense and there's no chemistry issues, then great. Let's go. Let's push this all behind us and see what can happen. And if, you know, he is a cancer when the season starts or he's not playing very well, we can reassess very quickly and talk about that closer to the trade deadline. But for now, I think we can bury this story until the season starts.
Yeah, to me, Vic has 190 million reasons to show up and play his best.
Yes, I mean, he does.
So this guy, he's made a lot of money in his career, right? He's probably made close to $100 million between his contract and his.
You know what? I bet Vic was thrilled to see the Pacers willing to drop over $100 million on a 30-something-year-old Gordon Hayward, who also has an injury history.
and the reason also Vic might prefer the Pacers because they can offer the most money next summer. I mean, at 30,
he'll be the most years. That's the big one for him.
Well, that's overall money. They can offer him the most. They can offer him probably $70 million more than any other team. I don't know exactly.
I don't think it's quite that high. It's probably 50 something, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought a team could offer him maybe 4 for $130. They offer him 5 for $190, maybe in that range. So in total overall money.
Yeah, he will not get close to that, but yes, that is true.
No, but they could. If he comes out and he has 2017-18 Vic season, they're going to be hard-pressed not to give him that kind of money, just if he's good, right? So that's what I mean. He has a ton of reasons to come out here, especially because this is going to be – I would guess his last major contract if he has a good enough year. And so he wants to be able to at least make $100 million. I mean, you know, I know, like I said, he's made a lot of money in his career, but this is like, you know, way to double his career earnings basically in the next 4 years.
Yeah, I agree with you there. He's got a lot of reasons to say the things he's saying as well. And if the Pacers are willing to give him money, he should be kissing ass the whole step of the way, because it sounds like his trade value is pretty low, which means other teams probably aren't willing to pay him. Although we did get a reported Bucks offer that was actually pretty healthy sounding, kind of close to what we had been discussing.
Basically the Brogdon trade, right? Or the Bogdan supposed trade that got killed, right?
A little more? Yeah, actually pretty close in that to value. It was George Hill, DiVincenzo, and pick 24. I'd say that's actually a little higher than the Bogdan trade, honestly. But
wasn't that what the Bogdan trade was? Am I wrong?
No, that was DJ Wilson, DiVincenzo, and Ersan Ilyasova.
Okay. I can't remember if Hill was in that or not. I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Okay. So, and KP did say in his presser they had an opportunity to acquire some old friendly faces, right? So maybe that matches up with the reporting from Jake Fisher, Bleacher Report as well. Anyway, yeah.
I'm going to trade a guy into the division, though.
And I just think, you know, what we have to see with Vic, but KP's been consistent with his message at every step of the way that Vic's going to be on the roster day one. And now Vic has finally put out that message via The Athletic. So, again, we can finally bury this story until 12 days from now when he actually plays a game and we can assess his performance.
Yeah, so let's do this. Let's take one more break, or a first break, I guess, and then let's talk about some of the other major stuff from the press conference, because I think there's some more important things to do with the actual basketball games and what we could see going forward this preseason and in the regular season. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at BuiltBar.com. So Built Bar, as we've talked about, I don't know, probably hundreds of times now, is an amazing protein bar company. It's 18 different flavors, everything from caramel brownie to double chocolate to toffee almond. These bars are 100% covered in chocolate. They are great for a healthy, conscious guy. They help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in delicious treats. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high in fiber. My favorite one, like I said, has always been the peanut butter brownie one. It has 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, and just 5 grams of sugar. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com, the promo code Locked On, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code Locked On for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, Tony, I know we wanted to move a little faster so we can kind of speed around some of this. What do you think of the comments from Pritchard on Miles playing more for, or at least one of the two Miles bonus, and Warren playing less of it?
That's kind of backwards of what he said, right? It was more Warren playing the four is what they wanted.
Yes.
So my feeling to what you just asked me, though, is I was confused. Because something he said early in the press conference is, yeah, we're giving the Miles the green light this year. We're going to let him shoot a bunch of threes, and Nate wants him to shoot blah, blah, blah. Yep, okay. I've heard that one before. I actually do believe it a little more now. There's a new coach who comes from a more modern-based game, is apparently very X's and O's savvy. Anywho, irrelevant. Very confusing that he comes out and starts with, we want to see Miles do this and that. He's going to get the green light to shoot a lot of threes. And then later to say, we want to see more TJ Warren at the four. Okay. And then something we'll talk about in a second, he talks about having to play Goga all these minutes. Something in this, either Miles is not playing very much and he's just going to shoot a million times in his 20 minutes a game, or Goga's not playing, or Warren is playing no four, because there is no way all those things can happen.
Not enough minutes. We've done that already, right?
We have added up the equation. Unless Sabonis is taking the hit, which makes no sense given his season last
year. I was going to ask for a trade in these and do that.
Yeah, so as good as Turner at the five, Warren at the four appeared to be in the bubble, Goga's the missing piece there, where if they really – we'll get to Goga in a second. He did say Goga has to play more, whatever. So that didn't really jive to me, but I did individually, outside of the concept of this is impossible, Warren playing more at the four, that should probably be something they should try to explore. And I think getting Hayward next to him would have helped with that, or at least presented that opportunity more. Miles shooting more threes absolutely sounds great. Goga playing every game sounds great. Individually, those things are all great. So if they can figure out how to do it, I'm all for it. But I don't think they can.
So, yeah, I guess the question is they clearly have an idea of how they want to play. Like they clearly wanted Hayward and wanted to play a small bullish, right? Either Hayward at the four, Warren at the four, whoever was playing the four, supposed to the main center, joined by Vic and Brogdon. Now, can they play that way even without making the trade? Sure, they could put Holly in lineup, Aaron Holly in lineup. They could put McDermott in the lineup. They could, you know, they have a few options. They want to play kind of smaller. I would guess they would start with Justin Holiday probably at, you know, somewhere probably playing the three if I had to, like, just pinpoint what spot he'd be at. So they could do that. And if they do that, it really means they don't – I mean, we saw the trade value of Turner, right? It's not that high apparently. They couldn't even, you know, basically swing a trade, give Turner away to a team that wasn't going to, you know – basically the Celtics chose – Tristan Thompson and a trade option over Miles Turner. So maybe the Pacers have the same impression and they just are going to minimize him a little bit. And like you said, play him 20 minutes and really, you know, close with a, you know, Holiday at the three and Warren at the four lineup, something like that. I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what, you know, or how long, like if Turner, for example, has like a short leash, right? If he screws up early on, do they just, you know, minimize his role and just looking to move him pretty much every moment since after the trade deadline starts?
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea. Maybe they're still leaning into Turner trades. Maybe McDermott's not going to play as much and Warren will get some backup 4 minutes. I mean, I guess that's possible and you could still get Goga in there. I don't know. I really – unless someone I am unable to predict to squeeze that out of the rotation, it's hard to figure out how to jive all that up. But honestly – Warren has to play a lot anyway, so he's probably not out of the rotation anyway. So Miles is the only one who could be the poor benefactor. I don't even know what the opposite of benefactor is. The hurt factor of more Warren at the four, but I don't see them doing that big pendulum swing unless Bjorkren's really ballsy and crazy. So I don't know what to make of all that.
Well, that's why I think they might have that, I guess, because they have a new coach, somebody who we don't know yet how he's going
to coach. Fresh eyes.
But I'm assuming he's going to be much more risk-taky than the previous pitcher coach who would take almost zero.
Is it even possible to be less risk-taky?
I mean he could play a set five and then set all five for a different set five at the same time every game.
Yeah, hockey sub, 5-5 the whole game.
Yeah, and just like and have like, you know, a 7-minute stretch from the end of the first, second quarter at each time. I'm like, yeah.
I guess that's technically true. I mean,
what we could see too is you know, depending on what he's – how he's feeling, we could see like a, you know, Sabonis early stagger, right? So I'm like, you know, 4 minutes in, Sabonis hits the bench and they bring in somebody, put Warren at the four, and then they play the bench. You know, there are things they could do. Now, the problem where it gets confusing is to do that, how do you fit Goga in? There's still no way to fit Goga in this. The only way to fit Goga in is to just not play one of the two starting centers.
Because this is a podcast and I need to have a take, my take is that the thing that is a lie of all those things that he's driving up is Goga is not just not going to play some games.
I would agree with you on that one.
And we all know that. It's the way that the Pacers roster construction is with the two centers, whatever. Not whatever. You know, he did say – his exact quote was, like, we have to find a way to play Goga, or, like, we have to play – I forget it. It was very succinct. But, like, they just can't if they want to do all the rest of the goals they have. With no G League season, it might be a little hard to develop Goga. But what they can do if they feel like they have to play Goga more, and I want to get this quote exactly right, so I'm scrolling through my own Twitter because I tweet it. What they can do is none of that Jakarta backup center anymore shit, right? Like, I know why they did it in the playoffs because they were trying to win, but like, just throw Goga to the Wolves. I don't like Jakar's awesome. He's on the minimum. Like, who cares? You just drafted this guy with the whatever-th pick. Like, get Goga in the effing basketball game.
And are we sure Goga, who now has had a year in his belt, isn't, you know, wowing in practice? I guess he hasn't had a practice yet. Like
when TJ Leaf was wowing in practice last summer.
Well, remember there was.
You have to have Goga play. That was the quote. That's it.
Well, the cheerleading thing was all fake. We all. That's
it was like, also from Brogdon, not a coach, but yes.
But there's been times where, like, I don't know. I mean, go back to, like, Nurkic and Jokic, right? They were on the – or was it Nurkic and Gobert? Who was on the – no, maybe it was Cantor and Gobert were together. And Nurkic back at like, 5 years ago. Who was – there were two centers on the same roster, and they had a
– The Nuggets had Jokic and Nurkic.
Okay, yes. That's what I mean. And they had a trade one because they had a clear space for Jokic because they needed him to play because they realized he was really good, right? I think it wasn't Cantor and Gobert on the same roster, too, and they had a – and they traded Cantor away.
Cantor and Nurkic were on the same team in Portland.
Okay. I said there's a lot of international
players. I think Cantor was on the Jazz at one point.
I thought he was with Gobert, and then Gobert was so good they had to trade away Cantor. I don't know. Whatever it was,
there
was
– where Cantor was before he got his giant offer.
Center issues where there's two – like – a team decides this guy is too good in practice. You were right.
Carry on.
Yeah, whatever. It doesn't really matter. My point is still that we could see that, right? I mean, we probably won't because it's been such a weird year, and Goga's probably still kind of figuring out. Honestly, another year of just kind of being, you know, a fringe player might be good for him to develop some more. And then he's got 2 years on his contract still. Let him, you know, and let him shine the next 2 years when you make a move eventually. But, like, if he's all of a sudden looks amazing in practice, because, you know, we don't know what his potential is. I mean, when they drafted him, obviously they said all the great stuff you'd say about a guy that was with Cassius Stanley. But who knows, right? He could be showing that he's a great 3-point shooter in practice and able to rim run a little bit too. And he's like the perfect fit. And they might have to figure out how to play him because he's just too good not to play. But we'll see.
Well, the next thing we have on the list from KP Presser that actually could help that entire situation is Jeremy Lamb news. So the good news is, as we've heard from Chad Buchanan and KP after the season, KP now, Jeremy Lamb sounds like he'll be in this kind of in-between recovery stage where he's done with the mental part, it's all physical, and he'll be kind of practicing or, like, attending practices, doing walkthroughs, all that stuff by the start of the season or in training camp. But KP did mention he won't be game ready until maybe mid to late January. So I'll give the Pacers, like, a month to potentially get worn in with some bench units at the four if they really want to mesh all that up and still keep the same 10 guys they want to play. So that would be no Jakar, no Sumner, and no Lamb from our core 13, we said, in your rotation, which is totally fine because Lamb started anyway. But I think that would be a way right at the beginning of the season to marry up all the things he said. But until then, if Lamb is back, then maybe not.
The Pacers have, honestly, and maybe they'll make this work because that's why they hired a guy who coached a team that played 11 guys. But they seem like they have too many playable players. The Pacers, you know what I mean? They have 11 guys. If Lamb, once Lamb's healthy, they could play. And it's like, that's too many. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I know.
Yeah, either swap one out for a less playable guy and an asset or a 2-for-1 or something, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's what we kind of saw. They were trying to do a 2-for-1 with Hayward. Yep. I mean, all this makes me think just that we're going to see kind of a weird, let's say, first, how many games will be? 30, 35 games so they can start trading players. And then we'll see them try to make some move again.
If I could make a bold prediction now, it's that they definitely make a trade deadline, like a big trade deadline trade. Not like swing for the fences trade deadline trade.
But if somebody, a big name.
A rotation player for sure involved.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe somebody we don't know of who's got one expire and they can go after who, you know, can start that kind of level player.
So. Well, someone in the West, every team in the West thinks they're going to make the playoffs this year, which is nuts. So someone in the West is going to be – like, obviously out by then, and then you turn to that team, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, managing just the amount of talent in the roster is going to be hard. I mean, that's going to be the hardest part, is especially if, you know, some of the players who made jumps last year because they were, you know, there wasn't a Vic, and let's say Vic comes back at a really high level, and then how do you balance out shots between him and Warren? It's a bonus. And then, you know, and then if Lamb comes in, and Lamb is probably not going to be good for a little while, right? I mean, let's be right. Towards his MCL, or ACL, and meniscus, he's not going to be, like, great with him back. But if he's good enough, then how do you decide the bench, right? Do you put Aaron Holiday? Do you put him? Play Justin Holiday? You know, they're probably all three similar. You know, how do you figure that out? So there's just going to be a lot of issues. There's going to be a lot of, like, kind of things to work through. Maybe enough guys are in and out of the lineup and they rest right. That doesn't really matter. But it's going to be interesting to kind of how they manage all that, because it's going to not be easy. Let's put it that way.
Right. Last thing I wanted to cover from this, we talked about Goga having to play us from deleting that from our list, is continuity was something Kevin Pritchard brought up. And this is kind of this will be the PR push in the lack of, Haywardness that they ended up with here. Alzay Johnson signed with the Raptors this week, but that is the only player from last year's roster who departed as a free agent. No Pacers choice involved in that decision. Happy for him, by the way. Oh. Great development staff in Toronto. But
Tony, you have a pretty hot take on continuity, right?
I don't have a hot take on continuity, do I?
Well, okay, fine. You're screwing up my tease. I thought you told me you had a hot take before the show, Tony.
I didn't.
Yes, you did. You said I have something I want to say about continuity. You did tell me that before the show.
I don't remember.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take one break real quick, and then you're going to tell me your thoughts on continuity, because I know you had a take. I'm pretty sure. So before the show, Tony, you told me we should talk about teams that had continuity and worked and didn't work, right?
Yeah. Is that a hot take?
I don't know, but I thought you had it. I thought analysis. You were developing a take about, you know, it's worked for a good amount of teams, right? We went through a
lot. I wanted to hash it out.
Okay, so why don't you hash it out?
Let's do that. Okay, yeah, the first team you brought up is one that I have here to think about, though. The Denver Nuggets, for the last while, have kind of leaned into same coaching, same continuity, right? Murray, Harris, Millsap, Jokic, and then whoever they've had, the three various guys over the while, but mostly Will Barton. A lot of injuries involved for them there. Garrett, and then, yeah, you know, similar bench guys all the time. Monty Morris, 2 years in a row. Torrey Craig. You can go on and on. Mason Plumlee was a part of that team for a while. They leaned in on continuity, and they grew from year to year to year. Obviously, you know, had the crazy run last year, but really they made the conference semis year before. They have the top 10 guy in Jokic. You can never compare any two team situations perfectly, but I'm trying to look at some pros and cons of continuity teams. So there's one that things went better. Then you go to the Celtics from 3 years ago to 2 years ago. Kyrie, Jalen, Tatum, Hayward, Horford team they kept for two straight years. That team went from the conference finals, and then things got not as rosy within the locker room, and then that team lost in the second round, and the only team they beat was the Pacers without Vic, who weren't very good, so that got worse for them. So continuity is kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I get that they have to sell something because they didn't – they clearly went hard for Hayward per KP's own admission, and they didn't get him. They have to sell something, and we talked about last week how they can still be better. And some of that is baked in continuity. But now I want to, since this is official and the thing they're spinning, let's look at other teams that did this and see, is this really the grass is always greener that they're pursuing?
So the continuity thing is interesting because I think teams can have continuity as long as they're like top two players are the same, even if they move the piece around, right? There's just some continuity there.
Right. I'm looking at heavy ass continuity, like this Pacers level.
Yeah. Which is harder to find. There's the other side of it where, like, we've seen in the past where teams that have, you know, 8 or 9 players who maybe none of them are superstars, maybe only a few are, you know, top level guys, let's say, but they all stay together. They can kind of overachieve in a way because they just know how to play each other because they, you know, on any night they can beat a team that's kind of off and whatnot. I mean, I think the Raptors are the best example of this. Really with that kind of pre-Kawhi team, right? I mean, I think DeRozan and Lowry were all-stars, but neither of them is a top 20 player, right? Lowry gets close, but probably both are in, like, the late 20s, right? And the Pacers, you could say, get close with Brogdon at times, Oladipo maybe, and Sabonis. And so there's that case that, like, just staying together year after year will help push them further along because they'll be able to win a bunch more games that you wouldn't expect because they'll be able to catch a team that's, you know, fresh and whatnot, and, you know, has a bunch of different players in the lineup early on, and then they might get a playoff series here too because they kind of know how that works, right? So
that
would be my best analogy. Obviously, it goes both ways. The Lakers have a brand new team this year, sort of the Heat, both teams made the finals, so like it goes both ways. When you have talent, you have talent, but and you know, the Heat, even for not, you know, being a new team, they just had amazing chemistry. I mean, clearly there's just something there, and having LeBron and AD is a whole other thing, but it could work. The problem is that in the East, you didn't see a ton of turnover, right? I mean, you saw the Bucks added a top, you know, one of their top three players in Drew Holiday, but like Boston remained the same, maybe a little worse, but relative same continuity. Philly's got their top two still, top three if you count it.
Philly shook it up enough that I'm not calling them continuity at all.
Yeah, but they did a more of a fringe thing, right? You still got Joe. It depends how
they dumped two starters.
Yeah, that's fair. And it depends how they play. They might play a whole new way, which would be different.
Yeah, they don't. I think Philly's going to be very different.
Yeah, that's fair, but it probably for the better. But like, what I'm saying is, in the East, there wasn't a lot of like crazy change.
Miami didn't go crazy with the shakeups. The Nets didn't go crazy with the shakeups. They didn't really have to. The Raptors didn't go crazy with the shakeups, so they're a little different. Yeah, you're right. I get what you're saying. It's just an interesting thing to look at and how it's worked in the past with and how it can apply to the Pacers. The Raptors, you just mentioned, the DeRozan-Lowry era Raptors are a good example where. the continuity didn't really help them as much to me. I mean, they were always really good, and then they always thought, okay, we just need to get this one piece to slow down LeBron, and it never happened. But they, you know, they never quite got to the point everybody wanted them to get to. And they, I would have loved to see, I think they would be a great analogy for this example, if they had fired Dwayne Casey and then gotten Nick Nurse and then not done the Kawhi trade. So we could have seen the same team with a new coach bridge from era to era and really analyze how that went for them. But then they got Kawhi. So different kind of change there. But yeah, continuity is kind of an interesting thing, because for some teams like Denver, it just the continuous growth. And obviously, again, they have a top 10 player, but his growth was a part of this. The continuous growth just helps that team take off eventually, and they stick together and grow together, and they go from young to really good. That's the good side, whereas the Celtics, like I brought up, and I want to find more teams. I'm just naming the same two examples again, but the Celtics teams had more vets, and they weren't really growing together. They were growing apart. It didn't work as well. So it's tough to find the push and pull. The Nets, the young Nets with Kenny Atkinson over there a couple of years kind of stayed together in group, but they weren't a playoff team. I'm looking more at contenders because
the Warriors had a lot of continuity.
Yes, they also had many, many very good players.
I try to think, like, the Spurs have done this, right? They've had a lot of continuity over the years where they had
Spurs have tons of continuity over the years. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like, I mean, they've obviously had some changing here on the fringes, but a lot of it is the
same. Yeah. It's different when, too, you have, in the case of the Spurs and even the Nuggets and the Celtics, when you have, and the Raptors with those. When you have some playoff success, you're winning a round, you're winning two rounds sometimes, it's easier to say, we go again, we're an injury away, or whatever. Whereas the Pacers have won three of their last 19 playoff games, you go, no, we're not close. And they're not. So that is where they can go, well, maybe continuity is a bad idea because we're farther away than we think. But, you know, Denver was, again, I keep going back to Denver, which is foolish because they have a top 10 player in the fold, but same deal. A couple years ago, they hadn't. You're not anything until you actually went around, right? Do something.
The old Pacers had continuity, right? From 11, 12, 13, 14. Yep. Pretty much same roster. I mean,
they made some fringy moves, but yes.
Yeah, guys got better. I mean, Glantz got better. PG got better. But once they signed West, it was pretty much West, Hibbert, George, and George, right? Paul George and George. No, that was like the roster. That was the core four, and they built around it differently, but that was it. I mean, Barbosa 1 year, had Scola 1 year and whatnot. I think the best thing about continuity, though, honestly, is – we can now pretty much judge whether DeMille was a good coach or not based on how they did this year, right? The exact same roster, right? So we'll be able to tell – one, we'll be able to tell if Brooklyn's a good coach because we'll say they compared to last year. And two, if he, like – they win – they're only going to play 72 games, right? So if they win 58 or 57 games, right, a crazy number, let's say, we can be like, oh, clearly he's a much better coach. And clearly DeMille was underperforming, right? It's kind of similar.
Well, it depends. If Vic is amazing, it'll be kind of hard.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But like,
that's the only thing. Like, someone has to be dramatically better than next year.
Well, but I guess it depends what he unlocks, right? Like, what if, I don't know, he unlocks something with Warren, right? Warren all of a sudden goes from being kind of, but like,
Aaron Holiday is amazing. There's a lot.
But to me, it kind of compares to the Warriors between Mark Jackson and Steve Kerr, right? They were relatively the same team. Obviously, Curry made a leap. I mean, that was pretty clear.
No, their big swap was David Lee and Draymond, right?
Yes, but I'm saying, but like, what also it did exactly is like Kerr kind of unlocked something. Like,
yeah.
But they're big, but Curry also, I mean, Curry was good, but his, that next season, he was like, I mean, he went from being, I don't know, top 15 to like the best player in the league. I mean, that was a leap. I know.
Here's another continuity team as we do this. Portland. Yeah. Portland doesn't get out of the first round very often. They have Dame, obviously. Again, top 10 player is a part of this discussion. They've stuck together forever, and they've only gotten out of the first round, what, twice, once? And not a ton.
How much finals 2 years ago in the second round one other time, I think?
Yes, yep. Sometimes it's just they're kind of stuck with the same roster. Again, they really are going for it now, but, you know, some teams just stick around and kind of roll the dice. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but history tells us it could go any number of ways, and I think we'll find out a lot about, like what Adam said, again, barring a miraculous improvement from someone, find out a lot about Bjorken and how that team goes. We have one big news team to get to. I think we need to do that now.
Yeah, so let's do the last thing we're talking about, and that's the preseason schedule. It was released.
We're burying this because it's the preseason.
Yeah, and it doesn't really – I mean, who knows what's going to happen in these games. But basically, on Saturday, December 10th, they will be in Cleveland – or December 12th, sorry. They'll be in Cleveland at 7 p.m. for their first preseason game. They'll play that Monday, also in Cleveland at 6 p.m. And then they will play that Friday at home against Philadelphia in Bankers Life. They have three games. We don't know the regular season yet. That will, is supposed to be announced, I think, sometime this week, but they don't. I'm not even sure they do the whole schedule at once. They might do it in pieces. So we don't really have any idea right now, once you have some other inclination that you know that I don't.
I don't know what they're thinking for the regular season schedule, although if I can use this preseason schedule to leap into the regular season schedule, two things. One, the game against Philly at home on the 18th is for sure on Fox Sports Indiana. I don't know about the Cleveland games yet, but I'm guessing they'll be on Fox Sports Cleveland if you're trying to watch them. Two.
Actually, I'm reading the Pacers press release. It looks like the games will be played without fans. They will be broadcast on Fox Sports and 1070. I think all three.
The game singular, if you can read, because the paragraph talks about the 76ers game. Anyway, okay. What I was going to say is they play the Cavs twice in a row in Cleveland, and I do kind of think that the preseason is a bit of a test into, like, the series kind of schedule in a specific location. So I think that there's a chance – well, I do think the schedule could come out this week like you do. I think there's a good chance that we'll see kind of series-like formats a lot to reduce travel, and there'll be a lot of stuff like this. And obviously Cleveland is close to Indy and stuff like that, but I think we'll see a lot of stuff like this where it's like a trial run of how does this kind of work and how does travel work and all that.
Yeah, I think you could see more like three games in 5 days all in one city kind of thing.
That makes sense. Yep, and then that's not a big deal about playing that many times and that many nights because there's no travel in between, which is usually the killer for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they discovered that in the bubble, right? The players actually were – healthier basically right. Because they didn't have to travel at all and it right. Was like great for everybody that they didn't have to do all that.
So the games themselves in the preseason, I mean, when we get closer to those, we'll do like a what we're watching for kind of thing. Most of it is irrelevant, right? Like last year they against the Kings, they played like the D team for 10 minutes in the fourth quarter, right? The games are irrelevant outside of a few things about the rotation and whatever. We'll get to that closer to the time, but it's cool to actually have the schedule, which again, 12 days from now they play a game. And I think what this is all about is for the NBA to see how their schedule can work and for the Pacers side to see how their stadium ops can work on a game day, which is why I think every team has one home game so they can really nail down their COVID procedures. I doubt they'll have actual fans for the preseason game. Maybe they probably will for the regular season games. I don't know how many. But
it says the one Pacer one that won't.
Yeah, okay, so they definitely won't. But I think it's to get ops down for everything else of like how a game day in the COVID times will go. So I don't think the preseason is as much about basketball as it is in the past. In fact, I think teams will actually play less minutes because they've had less time to prepare for the key guys. But I do think it's more about the NBA and stadiums getting all their shit together, basically.
Yeah, and it's not an easy process. I mean, we've seen with the NFL, they are not doing the best job right now.
Yeah.
Lots of COVID cases, lots of stuff like that. I mean, I do wonder if at some point the NBA has like a two-week break period. I mean, if they have built in some other things, some better ways to handle major outbreaks.
Actually, I can speak to that. There's a 5-day gap between the end of the regular season and playoffs, which is longer than normal, where it's only 2 or 3 days. I do wonder if that's what they can fit in some makeup games.
If they can just push the playoffs. I mean, they're not playing with that many fans, so it shouldn't really matter. It's not like it's not like before where it's like, you know, game. And I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff is kind of – I mean, the NFL hasn't done it because of the NFL, but like the NBA, I think, has no problem saying, okay, we're not going to play July 4th. We're going to play July – or whatever the final is going to be. We're going to play July 12th for the finals, right? Like just push it a few days if they have to, because I think they're more concerned about player safety than maybe the NFL is. Maybe
yep.
the hottest take in the world, but that's what it feels like.
I got nothing else. KP said a lot of interesting stuff, and if you want to watch it, I think that's on Pacers.com. I haven't rewatched it myself.
Yes, I watched some of it on Twitter. I watched some of it live, some of it not. I don't know. I was catching.
And then we're gonna get excited this week. But the big thing, if you're still here, we're doing a mailbag. I'll tweet it out. So please ask us questions. I already have two because I announced it last Friday, but get more, please.
Yeah, so we're going to have a mailbag the next 2 days. Then we're going to have some more training camp stuff. Then Tony's going to have a special guest on Friday. I don't know if you want to say who it is yet. You don't have
Nope.
So you'll find out.
I like that stuff.
And then we assume we'll know the schedule by next week. So we'll have a whole show on that or one or two or whatever we have. And we'll do our predictions. And just so we're clear, I think last season – did I beat you there? I did. I beat you there.
You beat me by one in the last game.
I got 37 of the 73 games right, and Tony got 36. And we did do a lot more. I think – did you take it based off our – did we re-guess during the bubble, or did we like
– Yeah, we did re-guess the bubble.
Okay, we did re-guess the bubble. Well, the Pacers beating Miami that last game is what honestly won me the whole thing. Even though in the useless game, it did that for me. So, yeah, so we'll do that again, and then we'll have some more stuff. Games – are now 12 days away, so we'll have preseason previews and then game previews, and we'll be back in, you know, season format already. I mean, it's only been, we've only been off, I do that in quotes, on the offseason for like less than 2 months. So already back at it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hopefully beating you this time around, but we'll see.
Well, you won't know that for at least a few months.
That's true.
All right. Well, as always, you can follow the Locked On Patriots podcast at, shockingly, Locked On Patriots on Twitter. You can follow Tony at Teased NBA, me at Freeman Adam 5. As always, we're bringing this podcast 5 days a week. We'll see you guys again.